Taking a look at the health of your computer now and your software with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in. Certainly, if you want to join us with a question, feel free at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Peter with us by phone today. Pete, how are you doing?
I'd much rather be there in person, I'll say that much.
Oh,
tore my hamstring, so a little bit hard to get around still.
Well, I'm sorry for that, but at least glad you're able to be with us by phone. Are you going to be laid up for a while? Or
I'm supposed to get evaluated by the doctor. Hopefully I'll get in the next couple of days, and I hear it's a lot of physical therapy.
Well, I tell you what, we've got plenty of callers online and some emails as well. And let's start with an email from Lou, who was going to be traveling today and not able to call. And here's what Lou writes. I have a brand new replacement computer. It's a 2 gig RAM, 250 gig hard drive, a Dell 531, MS Vista. It's all still in the box. What are the essential things to consider to get it up and running with no major glitches? And that's probably a question that a lot of people would have.
Get it up and running with no major glitches.
First, take it out of the box.
Yeah. That's a good question. I remember taking one out of the box and then calling in for tech support and them telling me that it was shipped with a virus worm.
Oh, man.
Because when I tried to hook it up to the wireless router, there was a glitch with the Broadcom original equipment manufacturer's device driver with the laptop, and it kept rebooting the computer. So it was not a fun experience, and then calling in for tech support and them telling me, well, you got a worm virus. And I'm like,
oh, man.
Okay, well, anyhow, you know, when I get a computer brand new out of the box, and I've done this recently a couple of times, I'm not an advocate for what's shipped on the computer for antivirus protection. Fortunately, in terms of Windows, Vista ships now with Microsoft Defender, which is their anti-spyware protection.
Yeah.
And that works well, and that's already installed on your system. The key thing is just making sure that once you get online with it that, you know, you update it. And I like to schedule it to run a scan when I'm on the system. So that, you know, if something pops up and it's asking me to react to it, I can do something versus having it do something when I'm not there.
Yeah.
And, you know, with 2 gigs of RAM and 250 gig hard drive, it really doesn't slow you down, okay. You know, having it run behind.
Okay.
In terms of antivirus protection, what I've found is, and I've had this question a lot before in the air, and also what happens is the systems are shipped with those, and the benefit to Dell and Gateway and all these other manufacturers, they get a little kickback with Norton and McAfee and so forth. So when you sign up for those, you know, they're kind of like the salesperson earning a commission. And this has been going on for a long time. It's not something new. But if you don't keep those things up to date and you're not really tuned in with how they interact with your system, I mean, they really put a lot of hooks in there. They can really bog your system down. If something gets in on the back door, those things can really be a bear to uninstall and try to get something in there that's effective. So what I like to do is, before I even get on to a network with it, is I uninstall those programs and then reboot the system a couple of times so that they're completely clean. And, you know, if you can, from another system, is to download ClamWin or Bitdefender or AVG or Avast. There are a number of good free antivirus programs, and I've even used a couple of them on, you know, at the same time, and put those on my system, and those work. I, to be honest with you, I haven't had one of my systems infected with a virus program. Now, as far as my kids go, I can't say the same thing because I'm not there, but You know, I tell them to keep it up to date and whatever, and they usually interrupt the process, and, you know, then you're at risk. But the thing to realize with the different programs, stuff like AVG, Avast, Bitdefender, those programs are commercially available. In other words, there's a manufacturer out there, you know, a little software company, and they're going to interact with your machine and say, hey, there's an update that you need to get, and, you know, click here, and it's going to interact with your computer and download it, and it's fairly straightforward, you know, to get it to work. The ClamWin program is actually an internet project where a number of people and programmers contribute to it, and because of that, if there's an update to the software, to the core program, they will tell you that it's there, but you're going to have to actively, you know, engage that link and say, okay, I want to download it and know where it is on your computer and then initiate the install of the update.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, that's a key difference to realize. The other thing is, you know, making sure you're prepared for backups. So how do you prepare for backups? Well, know where your data files are, you know, Internet Explorer, Mozilla, they, you know, if you like your favorites or bookmarks, know where they are on your hard drive, your email, Outlook Express or Thunderbird or whatever you're using, know where those are located. And with Outlook Express, you can change the folders. So, for example, I change my storage folder to a folder on my computer, it's called data, and then within data I call it Outlook Express. So then I know all those folders, that's where they're located, and then I can easily copy that to, you know, one of those smaller thumb drives, you know, a DVD, whatever you want to copy it to, or to another computer. But the key thing is to know where these things are located. You know, if you're using accounting data like Peachtree or QuickBooks or you know, any of those programs, you got to know where your data files are, and you got to back them up on a regular basis, because if you're, you know, just because you got a new computer doesn't mean that, you know, it can't crash.
Yep.
So
those are some good things to remember.
Yep.
And Joanne in Neshkoro has a question for you, so let's go to Joanne. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. I'm sure glad to hear you. I hope you get better.
Yes.
But anyway, no. I've had this problem. I get many friends who send me PowerPoint viewer, the PowerPoint emails.
Right.
And so I installed Microsoft PowerPoint Viewer 2003, and it shows up right here on my chart here. But still, when I try to get that up, you know, I click on the attachment there, I will get a pop-up that says, this file does not have a program associated with for performing this act. Mm-hmm. Create an association with it in the folders option control panel. But I don't know how to do that.
Okay. If you go into Windows Explorer and you go under one of the tabs, I believe is, trying to remember what it is. I could try and see if I can look it up on the computer. But what you need to do is associate it with PowerPoint, because usually the extension is PP, I believe it's PPT. And what you want to do is, using Windows Explorer, you can create the association so with whenever that file, you try to open it, it's going to associate it with the viewer.
But how do I find Windows Explorer? I've got all programs up here.
Yeah, Windows Explorer is actually located under Accessories.
Oh, okay.
So if you click on Programs, click on Accessories. I usually, you know, here's another thing. When I set up new computers, I always like to install an extra browser. And I always like to put Windows Explorer on my desktop so I can easily locate files. I don't like, you know, making that extra step to go to Start, Programs, Accessories, Windows Explorer. I like to have that right on my desktop.
Okay, now I've got Accessories, Windows Explorer. I've got Accessories, and I've got that clicked, and I still don't have it. I don't still have Windows Explorer on there. Do I go to, like, System Tools or Accessibility or what?
You should. Which version of Windows do you have?
XP, Service Pack 2.
You don't have Windows Explorer located under accessories?
No, I don't. I mean, I clicked on, you know, I clicked on it and I got accessibility, communication, entertainment, Microsoft Interact Training, address book, and on and on. But not Windows Explorer.
Okay.
Tour Windows Explorer. Oh, I'm sorry, I am sorry.
Okay. I got it.
I'm sorry, I've got it. Now
okay,
it says accessibility system tools.
Yeah, so then if you click on tools, and then it'll show you another link for folder options.
Okay.
And then in folder options, there's usually, let's see, browse folders. Where am I looking here? I'm laying down and trying to read a computer sideways. let's see. File.
Pete's having some trouble finding that.
Every time I'm trying this, but I'll keep working on it.
Tell you what, we'll...
I can tell you, you know, if you're in that, you know, that's where you want to be, and you can probably, you know, this is something that's been around for a long time. If you do just a Google search and put in, like, file association file association to open Windows program, default program, or to open up PowerPoint, or you know, virtually any program. There's going to be probably 100 links out there that will give you almost like a tutorial on how to do it.
Okay.
On a step-by-step basis, you know, how to click this, click that, and so forth.
Good luck. Thanks, Joanne, for calling. And you mentioned Googling. We had another email. Somebody said, I was just surfing around and Googled one of my best friends. I was shocked to see that not only were there a million entries for him, but that the first one was an email he and I had exchanged less than a month ago.
Mm.
When I checked myself, I found recent exchanges about a party I was going to, and this scares me to death. Is there any way at all, short of trashing my computer, to avoid having Big Brother, as he said, or someone like me who was just playing around, learn about the parties I go to or my political opinions?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's first I've ever heard of that. Now, that questions that come to mind because, you know, where are those emails coming from? You know, is it something that's a web-based email system? And if it is, then is it being allowed to be accessed by Google? In other words, is it a Google email system, their Gmail system, and is that something that they're allowing to be, you know, openly accessed like that? If not, is it a online backup that is backing up those files to an online storage site that also is allowing accessibility to that, or you know, is there something that has you know, gotten onto a system that is now copying those kind of privacy files to, you know, a website to allow accessibility to that? So there's some questions that need to be asked to, you know, to find out, you know, better answers to that, because that's kind of scary.
Yes, it is.
You know, that concerns me in terms of that kind of detail. I've never heard of that kind of detail being out there except for like online forum or discussion groups. You know, eBay has an online forum for, you know, support on their site. You know, there are a number of online forum discussion groups, and you know, that stuff just stays out there really forever. I mean, Google purchased another company that was doing, you know, news groups, and you know, now it's called groups@google.com, and the stuff out there is, you know, I wouldn't call it pre-internet, but it's kind of like pre-web before we use it as we know it today.
Right.
You know, back in the early 90s. So there are a number of questions that need to be asked and answered before I could, you know, say, you know, how to prevent something like that.
I might be sending a note to Google to find out what's going on, too.
Because, you know, if, you know, the other thing is, you know, we get so many of these EULAs, these end-user license agreements, and, you know, click here to proceed, and, you know, I don't know what product that individual is using that, you know, that person might have said yes to something that made that kind of stuff accessible.
Yeah.
You know, you just, you know, there are a lot of questions that need to be asked and answered before I could say, you know, what's the next thing to do.
Well, I just Googled my own name while we were talking here to see if I had the same problem. I've got 24,000 citations, but I don't see any of my own emails, at least, coming up in there.
I got a funny story to tell you about doing a Google search on a name. My wife did that, and she discovered that she was a speaker and a workshop participant at a conference that she had no idea she was supposed to be participating in. So, you know, she found that out, and then she inquired with the individual in charge, and they said, yes, we've got you scheduled for it.
Oh, man. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant with us today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Gary in Madison is next, so let's go to Gary. Hi, Gary.
Hi. My wife was complaining a couple weeks ago that the computer was running a little slow. We got this computer a year ago. It's a Dell Dimension desktop. It's got XP Service Pack 2, according to what I'm looking at, 0.99 gigabytes of RAM. And so I went to, we've got DSL through AT&T, and I went and got their spy by, or their, virus thing. And
yeah.
You know, and I've been running those. But then I went to defragment, and it said it needed at least 15% free space to do the defragmentation, and we have 2%, and I was surprised to see that. And so I'm not sure what we can get rid of. I looked at add remove programs, and we have, at my count, 106 programs on here, and I'm just not sure what we can get rid of safely. And I'm wondering what my best step would be. Should I just upgrade to more RAM, or just slowly go through and get rid of things?
Well, we can do a number of things to free up some space for you and hopefully get you going better. How much RAM did you say you had?
Well, as I'm looking at the system properties, it says 0.99 gigabytes of RAM.
Okay. One couple of easy things that you can do, and we've talked about this before, if you right-mouse click on your recycle bin and then click on Properties, you can resize your hard drive down to about 1%. By default, it's 10%.
Uh-huh.
So how big is your hard drive?
Hard drive, let's see. I'm not sure. Where would it say that?
If you were to use, like, Windows Explorer and right-mouse click on the C drive, it'll tell you the size of the drive and how much is free and available.
Oh, the C drive?
Yeah.
I've got that. I've got the disk defragmenter thing up on the screen here. It says 51.21 gigabytes capacity, 1.1 available.
All right. Well, 10%. You know, by default, 10% is going to be 5 gigs. So it'll free up, you know, quite a bit of space for you. So that's the first thing to do. So right mouse click on the recycle bin, click on properties, and then resize that drive down to about 1%.
I think I did that when we first got the computer.
Okay.
Try it anyway. Just make sure.
Just make sure. All right. Next thing is, have you changed the restore default settings to make that smaller?
No.
Okay. If you click on start, then accessories, and then system tools, and then system restore, there's a link where you can adjust the system restore settings. So if you click on that, you want to change that size of 12% down to 1 or 2%.
Okay.
You know, see what it lets you get down to. Okay. So those are two quick things that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Then have you done any kind of like file management in terms of getting rid of downloaded files that you don't need anymore, or have you cleared the history files or the cache in the browsers?
The disk cleanup, I do that pretty regularly.
Okay. You should make sure you clean the history, clean the cache. What do you use for email?
Well, it's through the AT&T, the DSL. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Are you downloading your emails to your system?
Downloading them.
Or are you looking at them online through the web?
I believe we're looking at them through the web.
Okay, so you're not downloading anything to your computer system?
Not personally doing that, no.
Okay. The reason I asked that, for example, if you were using some like Outlook Express or Outlook or Pegasus or any of these other email clients, what happens is you download the email messages to your computer, and they accumulate over time, and a lot of people don't delete like their sent files or their delete box. You know, and you can delete those files. That will free up a lot of storage, too.
Okay.
And also in, like, Outlook Express, there's a way to compact things down so it optimizes space.
Okay.
Let's see. Have you done you said you do the disk cleanup regularly with your file management?
Yes.
Through the accessories and system tools and disk cleanup?
Yeah.
Okay. In terms of the files on, programs on your computer, you said you had like 106 programs.
Mm-hmm.
Are there programs that you don't really need?
Well, that's the problem. As I look at them, I don't recognize them. I don't know if they're something that I need that I don't know I need.
Okay.
Well, you said the system you got like a year ago?
Yes.
Okay. Typically, these systems are shipped with programs. Sometimes we don't, they sound like nice freebies, and they kind of hang around, and they're still freebies, but then you don't use them anymore. There might be programs like a QuickBooks trial program. So look for any kind of like trial programs on your system, under control.
Okay.
The control panel, and then add, remove programs. So anything that looks like a trial,
okay,
I would get rid of.
Yeah.
Anything that has an older date, that might say a 2005 version or 2006 that that you're not using, that will help identify it.
Okay.
Those are the things I usually look to remove. And let's see. Just trying to think if there's anything else. You might want to go within two spots on your C drive. There's a folder that might be called temp, T-E-M-P, and then there's also a folder under Windows called temp, T-E-M-P.
Okay.
And what I would do is I would delete the files or folders within those two.
Okay,
because what happens is when you install programs or, your system may be interacting with a website and you're installing an update to Macromedia or Java or something, the system uses those kinds of folders to deposit installation files that you don't need once it's done.
And when I do the disk cleanup and it says it's getting rid of temporary files, it's not getting rid of those?
It doesn't get rid of those kind of temporary files. It's getting rid of what a lot of people don't realize is that when you visit a website, all those pictures that you see on the website, so like the logo, the go button, the search button, a picture of a boat, a picture of a piece of clothing, whatever it might be, each one of those files is written to your hard drive along with the text.
Okay.
And those are what are considered temporary files.
Huh.
The temporary files I'm talking about are dealing with like program installs, and usually those don't disappear unless you've got a real good cleanup program to get rid of them or you just actually do them yourself. And they can accumulate quite a bit over time.
Yeah.
The other thing that's a good rule of thumb to do is when you're downloading files, I always like to download files to a folder called Downloads because I know where they are, and I know when I'm done with them, I can get rid of them. If you don't know where they go, it's a lot harder to find them to get rid of them. And some of those files can take up lots of space. You know, when you're downloading, you know, Service Pack 2 from Internet Explorer could take up 70 megs of space. Well, you know, in a smaller system, that adds up pretty quick.
Yep.
So it's just a good thing to know where your files are, and when you download things, to be able to get rid of them after a while because you don't really need them anymore.
Good luck. Lots of good advice there. Thanks, Gary, for calling. Appreciate it. Charles in Lewiston, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Charles.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm trying to work with an early model IBM PC. They call it Personal System 1. And it's equipped with the DOS operating system, and it has about 30 megs of hard drive and 1 meg of RAM. And I'm having it has the Microsoft Work set of applications, which seem to work as advertised. But when I try to do some DOS tasks like back up the hard drive, I keep getting the message that it is the incorrect DOS version. And the DOS version that displays when you choose the prompt is IBM DOS version 4.0. And this system that they have has a drive D, which they call built-in IBM DOS. And it also has, of course, the drive C. And the system is set so that when you boot up, it starts from built-in DOS on drive D. But one of the DOS commands that does work is a thing called customize. And on the customize screen, you supposedly can choose having the system start from built-in DOS or have it start from a disk. And if you choose to have it start from a disk, you can specify either drive C or drive A. And I will select the start from drive C disk. But then when I reboot the computer, it's always back in starting from drive built-in DOS and drive D.
All right. How do we fix that, Peter?
It sounds like the firmware is not allowing you to boot up off of that A drive. That's what it sounds like you're trying to
I'm trying to boot out from drive C, because C has old DOS 1, old DOS 2, and it has DOS.
Right. The boot sequence is what it sounds like you have to change.
Mm-hmm.
So to get into the firmware or the BIOS of the system, when that computer starts up, it might say something like hit F1 or Alt-S to enter the system setup.
I've never seen any screen like that.
I don't remember what it is for that computer, but what's going on is you're making a change, and then when you're telling it to reboot, it keeps going back to that same drive. And it's in the firmware or the BIOS that needs to be, well, not the firmware, but the BIOS that needs to be changed for the boot sequence.
Okay.
In other words, the boot sequence is D and not C, and you want it to be C. So it's a common change to make, but you have to be able to get into the BIOS to do that. If you have access to, you're getting onto the internet, what I would do is probably do a search on your particular model, and there's probably a model number, not just PS1. It might say, 5025 or 3020 or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And, put in, how to get into the BIOS. So, you want to do a Google search on that, and that'll tell you how when you boot up that computer to hit. You could try hitting Alt F1 when it's booting up. You could do Control Alt minus, Control Alt S, Control Alt plus. There are a number of different ways that the manufacturers have invoked that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even on today's computers, you can do that because you can change the boot sequence to be a DVD drive or a CD drive before it goes to the hard drive.
So give that a chance, give that a try, Charles, and see what you can come up with. Good luck, and you know you can always send an email, shoot an email if things don't work out, and we'll see what we can do. Good luck, thank you, Jeff in Oshkosh, I believe is next. Let's go to Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I remember a story from a year ago that you actually coincidentally touched on this morning, Peter. How you had called technical support over in India, and
yeah.
With your brand new computer, you have a worm virus. I'm wondering, how does that tale of consumer vengeance end?
How did it end?
Yeah.
I actually fixed it myself because the first tech support person hung up their phone on me, and I called back and talked to a supervisor, and he said, "We don't have supervisors here." And I said, "Well, this is what happened, and this is what I'm going through, and I can't believe that you're telling me a worm virus is being shipped with a brand new computer because I haven't hooked it up to any kind of network, but that's what I'm trying to accomplish." And what I ended up doing was going online and searching for new device drivers for the Broadcom wireless adapter that was shipped with a computer, and I installed that, and that fixed it.
But you had to do it on your own.
But I had to do it on my own. So it was frustrating in how they were, you know, immediately putting the blame on worm virus in general. That's what, you know, all the consumers, you know, that's like a 99%, you know, it's a worm virus kind of thing. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. It can't be.
There's no improvement, no hope for us illiterate consumers out here.
Well, I think it's, you know, part of the problem, and, you know, I never followed up with the manufacturer, but it's really quality control, because when you think about it, you know, I took that right out of the box, sitting right on my table, and I said, okay, let's get this thing going, and turned it on and said, all right, I've got a wireless network, let's log on to it. And immediately, you know, it flashed this one line error message, and then quickly rebooted so fast that I couldn't read the error message. And I sat there and I rebooted it probably 20 times, or watched it reboot 20 times, and I still couldn't see the error message. It was so fast. So I think it was probably quality control in terms of letting something like that get out that was, you know, the key problem.
All right. Thanks, Jeff, for calling. Appreciate it. The caller, someone called in regarding the last caller just before Jeff here, and the last caller, this person suggested that the caller go to his autoexec.bat file, make a copy and print it. He'll see the changes he needs to make.
Yeah, it's a possibility, the autoexec and the config.sys as well. The thing with the old DOS machines and the different versions of DOS is the message he was getting is that one version didn't like the other. And that's why when he was trying to change that boot drive, you know, he's getting frustrated that he couldn't get the old DOS to talk. So that's a good suggestion to look at the we don't even think of autoexec .bat and config.sys anymore because they're kind of on the system, but no one really pays attention to them anymore.
Greg in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Greg.
Hi. I'm considering purchasing a Fujitsu U810 Ultra Mobile PC, and they offer three operating systems, Vista Home, Vista Office, and XP Tablet. I would like to somehow get an instant on capability with this, and I was told by the technical support people that having the XP tablet resident on some sort of solid state storage is as close as I'm going to come. I'm wondering if there's any way to cobble like CE into its parent operating system. Any suggestions on that?
I'm not familiar with the I'm familiar with Fujitsu, and they've been making these tablet devices for a long time. Do you want it to be instant on?
Yes.
I would probably go with that suggestion of, you know, the with the external, you know, setup that you referred to.
Okay, so if it has a capability of some sort of solid-state storage in the computer, that would do the same thing.
Correct.
Okay, and is that going to have a problem with doing upgrades or any other adjustments that one typically sees with a hard drive resident operating system?
You shouldn't have any problems. No.
Okay, great. Thank
you. All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it very much. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in. Pete, one of the things that I wanted to bring up related to a very inexpensive computer that a guy has developed, that they're developing for use worldwide, and I'm wondering if you're familiar with it. They sell for about $200.
Yeah, actually, I was going to bring up, there's a website for that. I forgot what it's called, but I think I was going to mention that last month, but they were trying to shoot for $100, and the price point's up to like $182.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is they've got a program where they want you to buy two for $400. And one of them they'll give away worldwide for accessibility, you know, for kids around the world.
I looked in, I think it was in a Newsweek article that mentioned that it was pretty powerful and runs on solar and about a 7-inch screen. And so it really sounded interesting. And for $400, you can give somebody in a third world country a computer and have one for yourself. Sounded like a pretty good deal.
Well, to me, you know, there's a lot of things that I would like to see. One is, you know, more accessibility to computers, and I think, you know, with the way we have access to our highways and it's government funded, I think, you know, the internet should be the same way. And you know, when I came up with this injury and I logged on, I mean, you know, I can't even imagine dealing with things without access to the web and the internet the way it is today, because it's just the world's brain online.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way people are willing to share and the accessibility information, it allows, you know, kids that, you know, can, you hear so many stories of kids that, you know, when they make it to developed countries and how they can succeed and make the world a better place. You know, if they only had access to the stuff where they are, to begin the journey there rather than waiting to get somewhere else.
Right.
So,
we should look that up. We should look that up, and next time you're on or something, give that website, because I think that's it's certainly well worth looking into.
Yeah, I love that idea of solar power.
Yeah.
I mean, that solar power stuff, I'm like sitting here going, why aren't we driving around in solar powered cars? For God's sake, that would be awesome.
Let's go to Teresa in Janesville. Teresa, hi to you. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was just listening to what you were talking about with that computer. Is there anything I could Google that where I might be able to find it?
You could probably Google computer. Computer for under 200. You know, I might even try it while we're talking here, you know, see if I can find it. But computers for all, I think it might be the project, something like that. But
okay, because I'm in the process, which was the reason that I was calling. I'm in the process of trying to buy a laptop, a notebook. And I had the big question I had was XP versus Vista. I've been told by several people that there are a whole boatload of bugs to be worked out with Vista, and that it can be kind of frustrating sometimes. So I was wondering if you had an opinion, and if I should just stick with, because you can still get XP on some of the units.
Personally, I would probably stick with XP for now. Vista hasn't gone through its first, if you want to call it, service pack like XP has. XP is a pretty steady, stable platform. There's a lot of software out there that supports it. In fact, there are some industry-specific applications that tell their users don't get Vista machines because we won't support your computer because our software is not certified to run on it, and we don't want to deal with issues and crashes and so forth because it was caused by a Vista system. Personally, I have Vista now in a couple of my home and business systems, and it adds an extra layer of complexity to some of the things that I used to be able to just kind of wing it on XP or go to it faster, and I don't like that.
I don't like complex either, the old KISS.
And I also use a Mac system, and, the Mac OS X system works well, too. But, if you're a Windows user, I would stick with the XP platform for now. Okay. Unless you've got some real pressing urge to upgrade to Vista, I would stay with XP.
None, and I like to keep it simple.
Yeah. Okay, good luck. Thanks, Teresa, for calling. Joe and Nina, hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hey, I enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Here's my situation. I have a Windows XP system. It's 3.5 years old. I have about a gig of RAM. And the machine seems to be getting slower and slower, and especially on the internet. And I've done most of the usual fixes in terms of reapportioning memory and defragmenting the disk. I've had a number of people who repair computers say to me that after 3.5 years, it's time to reformat the hard drive and just reload my programs. Mm. And I wonder what you think of that.
Yeah, I generally don't like to do that. Do you have a lot of little icons that start up in the right-hand corner of your computer?
I must have 8 or 9.
Yeah, see, those are the kind of things that start to bog your system down, slow it down. So on my InfoStar website, if you go to the tips page,
okay,
which is listed on the left-hand side, so you click on tips, I believe it's tip number 18, and it's about Windows startup and how to optimize it. There are some excellent links there that go through it step by step about what you should be concerned with. And if there are any of those programs that you have, questions about, there are like 5 different databases that I've bracketed in links. So there's like brackets for one database, number one database, number two, and so forth. Those are websites that have gone to great detail and effort to, tell you what these different things are doing on your machine. But the quick and dirty way to do this is if you you click on Start, click on Run, and then type in MSCONFIG, and then hit Enter, and then go to the Startup tab, and write down, so you need a piece of paper and pen or pencil, and write down, and whether or not you understand what you're writing down or not doesn't mean anything, but you should write down what each line is and what each box is checked. And you can uncheck all the boxes and then restart your system and then see how your computer, works for you. If it if there are certain things that you would like to have back in there, you almost have to do it on a trial by error, you know, trial by error basis, and put them back in one by one to see what they do for you, and that way you'll understand it better. Takes a little longer, but you're going to know your system better, and more than likely you're not going to want to have many, if you might want to have like one or two of those back in there, which might be like your antivirus program and Microsoft Defender or whatever you're using for spyware, because you want those things to be starting up when your computer starts up.
Well, I've printed that list out, and I found a website that'll explain to you, that it would explain to a person like myself what those programs are doing. Mm-hmm. And one recommendation I remember was that to uncheck the box one at a time.
Right.
Because they said if you don't do it that way, then you might get into other sorts of problems.
I guess I do the shotgun approach. That's the way I've done it in the past. I do know that the antivirus and the your spyware programs are the ones that you don't want to uncheck. So in that regard, you don't want to uncheck all of them. But I don't know what you're using for anti-spyware, if you're using McAfee or...
CA.
Okay, so you'll probably see a link there for CA, and that'll probably be the one that you'll leave checked. And then if you're using anything for, you know, looking out for spyware, you might be able to identify it too. Some of these things you can tell what they are, and some of them are kind of like hieroglyphics. They're not too friendly about trying to tell you who they are and what they're doing.
Why do you not like reformatting the hard drive and reloading?
Generally, I don't really see that doing much. I never like to reformat a drive unless I have to. Unless it's been compromised so bad that there's a question about the actual hard drive's integrity. In other words, mechanically, that it's having a problem. And you need to make sure you've got all your data covered, you know, all your, you know, your email, your favorites, your Word documents, your spreadsheets, any of your other application data files, when you go to do that, that's a pretty dramatic, you know, electronic digital surgery on your computer, because you're blowing everything away. And, you know, you don't want to rely on one backup copy of your data, because if that somehow gets corrupted or gets placed near a magnet or, you know, gets stepped on or, you know, something happens, you know, you're out of luck. So,
okay.
And I usually like to... do good housekeeping, good file management to work on keeping the system maintained and getting rid of things that I don't need. And usually I don't have problems with the systems year after year.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Joe. Kim in Kewaskum, you got a quick question for us here.
Well, I don't know how quick it is. Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have several questions, or maybe problems. Number one is that here recently my PC won't shut off. When I shut down, it just says, gives that blue screen and says, okay, we're shutting down, and it could be hours before I come back and I'll just turn it off by itself.
Okay.
The other one is that sometimes I'll be working in Photoshop or Dreamweaver or InDesign or something like that, and suddenly it'll just shut down.
Okay.
And then I'll get this maddening screen up that says Adobe Photoshop has encountered a problem and needs to close. We are sorry for the inconvenience. Well, not as sorry as I am.
No.
And then they want me to send the error report or don't send, and that's inconsequential. But
Send the error report. But what I think what's going on is you got kind of a domino effect. And which version of operating system are you using?
I'm using XP... home with all the updates. I got a P4 2.8,
okay.
1.5 gig.
Okay, what you need to do is reboot your computer, and when it's starting up Windows, if you hit the F8 key,
yes,
you want to get into the safe mode and bring it up in the safe mode, and what you want to do is go into, click on Programs, click on Accessories and System Tools, and you want to do a number of different things. You want to do disk cleanup. You want to clean up all the temporary files. You want to do a disk scan, see if you have any problems that look like that are out there, and then you want to do a disk defragmentation. And after you do that, then I would reboot the computer again, you know, do a shutdown and reboot it, and then reboot it again. In other words, do another restart, a second time. And hopefully that should remove. It sounds to me that you've had some crashes on different occasions, and what happens with Windows over time is it just kind of, they build on each other, and then all of a sudden you have a domino effect, and then they just start knocking each other, and your system won't shut down properly, and your applications start having more frequent crashes.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Glad to have him with us and certainly happy to have you listening in. And Pete, about this time of the program, we like to go to your top 10 list and take a look at what you've come up with.
I've got my top 10 list, but I haven't posted them yet, so they'll be up there sometime today or tomorrow.
Okay.
Let's see. You know, I was last, probably 4 days. I didn't feel like doing too much.
Yeah, no, I imagine so.
Yeah. All right, this first one is called School Matters, just like it sounds, school and then matters, M-A-T-T-E-R-S. And it's for a resource for educators, policymakers, about all the different states and the school districts and dollars spent per kid. I mean, the data is unbelievable. Number two is called Instructables. And it's a website that gives step-by-step instructions on just a wide variety of neat projects. So Instructables.com. And number three, Lady Bird Johnson, who passed away earlier this year, was just a real advocate for flowers, especially wildflowers. It was instrumental about getting a lot of them planted all around the country. And University of Texas at Austin has a website called wildflower.org, which is just an awesome resource for that. And Larry, are you a Halo 3 fan?
A Halo 3 fan?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
You know what that is?
No.
Master Chief? You don't know who Master Chief is? Mm. Well, Halo 3 is the game that made Xbox, the Microsoft Xbox gaming system, what it is today. I remember my kid first wanting an Xbox, and I said, well, what game are you going to play? He says, well, the only game is Halo 3. Or Halo. And with Xbox 360, they just came out with Halo 3. And here he is, a freshman at college, and he's like, Dad, I'm buying Halo 3 and you know, staying up all night playing it. I'm like, great.
No wonder I don't know anything about it.
Well, there's a really neat website that is for video gamers, and it's called OneUp.com, so OneUP.com, and it's got cheats and previews and all that good stuff. This next site is called The Inside Groove. So just like it sounds, inside groove.com, and it's a NASCAR site, but it's just got a phenomenal amount of information about, just not just about NASCAR news, but the team, the driver information, standings, statistics, and a lot more. Number six, I don't know if you know, with all the football that was going on this weekend, Larry, did you know there was actually the NHL opened up its season in London?
No, I didn't.
Well, the Ducks and the LA Kings played their first two games at the O2 Arena in London, England, to start the new National Hockey League season. And for those of you that don't know this website that's been around for eons, and it's been a great hockey resource, it's called thehockeynews.com. And it's got everything there about hockey. And I remember reading that newspaper when I was a kid. That was like gospel for me.
Okay.
Number seven, you know, we got the baseball season. Well, let me tell you, It was probably more baseball I watched this year than in my previous lifetime and the lifetime before that because of how much fun the Brewers were to watch. It's called baseballprospectus.com. So baseballprospectus.com.
Okay.
And what's phenomenal about this website is the amount of statistics. So just click on their statistics link, and they have statistics on just about anything you can imagine about the game. So if you're a baseball fanatic and you don't know about that site, the statistics, you'll probably love that one. Now, this laptop site, I'm going to cheat a little on this top 10, Larry.
Okay.
Because you got to read between the lines. Professor at MIT, you know, that's behind this laptop, one for one kid, you know, around the world, the website is called laptop.org, laptop.org. Now, if you don't really read well through these websites and try to figure out what's going on, in order to get wind of when they're going to start releasing these laptops, you know, where you buy one and donate one,
yes,
you actually have to sign up for it. And it's going to happen, November 12th is their target date, mm-hmm. and they actually have another website for that. So that's going to be number 9, and that's xogiving.org. So it's xogiving.org.
Okay.
And then the last one is a favorite one that I've used for years, and I still like going to the Weather Channel, you know, weather.com.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, you know, when you're looking for statistics on weather, wonderground.com can't be beat.
Wonderground.com?
Yeah, wunderground.com. And, you know, it's just a text. It's got pictures and everything, but, you know, it's just like, you know, click on temperature, click on heat index, click on wind chill, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it just makes it really easy to get access to data. And I just love data.
All right. And all those will be up on your website in a couple of days.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's go to Larry in Brookfield. Larry, hi.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
Thank you so much for your show, Larry.
Sure.
And Peter.
Yep.
I came up with a problem this past week. I have Trend Micro PC selling
okay.
for my software, and I got a Trojan that popped in.
Okay.
I went to their website to try to get information on this particular Trojan and various other ones, and I can't find a listing for this one anywhere.
Okay.
My main problem is it has me knocked out of the internet at this point, and I'm not able to find out how to remove this from my PC.
Hmm.
Okay. what you're probably going to have to do is, number one, I would, you know, you said you can't have that, you can't gain access to the internet with your system, is you should obviously uncable it so it's not trying to get out anymore, because it might be trying to do its thing and you don't realize it.
Okay.
Is to see if you can download from some other computer and burn a CD to install some other antivirus programs.
Okay.
You might want to try to see if you can gain access to some of the ones I mentioned earlier in the program, where you could go to Infostar.com, click on Virus Info Center, and then go down to where it says AV Help. In the middle of the right side, you'll see a whole bunch of bracketed links. There are a number of different free programs you could try and download, like Avast or AVG. Or you might want to go to some of the trial websites for some of the professional ones, like Avast Cells and Avast Pro. So don't just download the free ones, but maybe download even the professional ones and install them on your computer and try and see if you can get them to do a scan to remove or quarantine those files
okay.
that are causing problems.
Is it unusual for my security software not to be able to quarantine or remove?
Well, you bring up an interesting question, and I've mentioned this before on the air, in that there's no 100% guarantee, even if you keep your software up to date, because the way they find out about these new new viruses that infiltrate systems is by people like you that get infiltrated and then let them know.
Okay.
And then they find a fix to it, and then they put that fix out in their database that is then downloaded with, you know, for everybody else. So it's really hard to be 100%. But the best thing you could do is just trying to make sure you're updating it as often as you can. I recommend at least once a day, and almost once a day is what the AV programs are doing, is communicating with you that there's an update to their database. So the best thing you can do is just trying to keep it updated as often as you can, at least once a day. And that's why I'm an advocate for running more than one AV program on a system, because if one misses it, the other one might be lucky enough to get it.
Okay, like a backup that way.
Right.
Right.
Now, occasionally, and it's been rare, I've seen where there have been conflicts, and the conflicts are usually more often with Norton and McAfee being, you know, one of the two. You know, where if I've had ClamWin and Bitdefender, or ClamWin and AVG, or AVG and Avast running together, I have not seen conflicts with systems with those on them.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your help.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Thanks
a lot
for calling.
The other thing is once you get back online, you know, once you're able, if you're able to quarantine and get back online, how long have you had this going on?
This happened last week, Thursday.
And you kept on using it, right?
As far as the computer?
Yeah.
Yes, but what happens, I'm hoping this is safe, but with my software, it comes up, it says, halt internet traffic. So as soon as that pops up, I hit that button, so it's hopefully halting the internet traffic, but I did not remove cabling. I'll do that next.
Yeah, but what's crazy about these things is when you try and visit these websites that, you know, are antivirus websites, they almost have like a reference list built into them that says, okay, if this person tries to keep going to this website, make it worse for them. Because they're recognizing that you're trying to do something about them, that they're eventually going to get found out, and that's what they don't want.
Yeah.
So that's what's happened to your system, is it got to the point where it said, "Look, I'm done messing with this guy. he wants to get rid of me, and I'm done messing with him."
Good luck, Larry.
Yeah. Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling, Joanne in Fitchburg. We'll go to you now. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a problem came up last week. I have a Microsoft Windows XP.
Okay.
Okay. When I want to register for some program, the pop-up window will not let it do it. I get the message saying that, you know, please, take care of the pop-up window or the pop-up server, and then, it will not let me register it.
So are you saying that, like, a pop-up through Internet Explorer?
Yeah, Internet Explorer.
Okay, it's not, you have your, you have a pop-up blocker turned on.
Yeah.
And what you should do is turn that off to allow that pop-up to come up so you can respond to it.
How do I turn that off?
Usually they're in the lower portion of Windows or Internet Explorer. There might be like a, I forgot what the icon or the little picture looks like, but it's on the very bottom right side. You can, if you hover over it, it might say pop-up blocker or pop-up blocked, and if you click on that, it will, you know,
go off.
No, it will ask you if you want to allow it to continue. You know, if you want it to pop up. There's also in Internet Explorer, you can turn off your pop-up blocker, or you can change the settings on it, and it's under Tools.
Oh, okay.
you go to pop-up blocker.
Okay.
You'll see it says turn off pop-up blocker or pop-up blocker settings.
Okay.
And you can modify those settings, so you might have it set too high for the website that you're going to.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
And then
Thank you very much.
And then once you do that, close your browser and then reopen it.
Mm-hmm. Good luck, Joanne. Thank you. Jane in Grafton, your turn. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Hi.
My husband and I just purchased a new Dell laptop.
Okay.
And he said that he is going to have one of his friends uninstall Vista and put in one of the other Windows XP or something.
Okay.
Is that a good idea?
Well, you got to be careful in that you got to make sure that you have all the device drivers for the components that are on the laptop for XP. In other words, the same device drivers that are for Vista may not necessarily be the ones that are going to work for XP. So what I would do is you can use a program, it's called Belark Advisor, that might help you figure out all the different things that are on that computer.
How do you spell that?
B-E-L-A-R-C, and then Advisor. And
okay.
It's something you can download. I have it listed under Utilities. If you go to Infostar.com and then go to the Virus Info Center and then click and then look for Utilities, you'll see Belark Advisor. If you download and install that and then run a report, it'll tell you everything about that computer. And
okay.
You just want to make sure you've got all the different device drivers for your network adapter, your wireless network, the CD drive or the DVD drive, the video card that's built into it. You'll probably be able to get it from Dell. You might want to even email Dell and tell Dell that's what you'd like to do. And they
okay.
may even say, here, you know, we'll make available to you this file that has got everything in it that you need. Or they may point you to a web page that says, here are all the device drivers for XP, because, you know, they've had people ask for that before.
Yep.
But that's what I would do. I would not just say, okay, I'm going to install it and not have all those things ready.
Yeah. Good luck, Jane. Thank you very much for calling. And on to Paul in Grafton. Hi, Paul.
Hi, guys. I have a hard drive upgrade question that I thought would take about an hour to get settled, and a month later I'm still looking for a definitive answer on this.
Oh, that's not fun.
I've got I just recently purchased a new workstation, which came with a pair of serial ATA drives.
Right.
But on the motherboard and in the BIOS, I do have access to a RAID serial attached SCSI controller.
Okay.
So that's kind of a no-brainer to do the upgrade. When I called Dell about cabling, because I know the physical interfaces for those are the same, the answer from Dell, although the serial attached SCSI is a much faster interface, Dell said, well, your cable should work, but I don't want to spend thousands of dollars on hard or fast drives and use cables that should work.
Okay,
so,
well,
is there a serial attached SCSI cable? Because when I do an internet search for that, I can't find any.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you have the hard drives?
I do.
You do? You have SCSI hard drives?
Yes.
Okay. The reason the SCSIs used to be, you know, big was because you could span multiple drives, you know, for big volumes. But with the SATA drives, that's not such a, you know, it's no longer an advantage.
Mm.
So they're telling you that the cables will work for the SCSI drives, and you have that built onto your system.
Correct.
If the interface is the same on the drive, it probably does work.
Okay.
I mean, those connectors only connect to the ones, in other words, they only will go into what allows them to connect to.
I guess my concern, though, is because the serial-attached SCSI has so much more throughput, will the cables handle it?
It's more the system board being able to handle it.
Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, again, that thing that you brought up, the throughput's not as big of an issue as it used to be. because the SATA 2 drives, I believe the throughput is like 300 million bits per second.
Yeah.
Which is tremendous compared to what it used to be. So all the advantages of SCSI have gone away with the changes in the hard drive technology. Mm. In fact, the Mac Pro that I have, that they use the SATA 2 drives, and you know, if you go to a store and look for an SATA 2 drive, you'll see that they're both Mac and PC compatible. And on the outside of the box, that's what the throughput is.
Okay.
And all the high end machines, that those are the drives that they're using. They've really gone away from SCSI.
Okay.
So they should be okay.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Thanks for calling. We got an email. Remember earlier, someone Googled a friend and his email showed up on the search.
Right.
Someone else emailed in and said, if the user who saw his own emails, if he has Google Toolbar or Google Search installed on his desktop, he will see his Gmail conversations related to in with the Google results.
Oh, yeah, he's probably, he's got Google invoked on his own machine, so he's getting that turned in on his search, yeah. And you know what? From the get-go, I've never put that on my machine because if you read the fine print on that, you're allowing Google to have access to that stuff.
Oh.
And so that's why I've never put, you know, the Google search stuff for your computer.
Yeah.
So that's a really good point.
Yeah, that was an excellent point. And also the World Computer from MIT that we were talking about earlier and the Excel computers,
yep.
It doesn't run on Windows. It only runs on Linux.
Well, you know, that's one of the ways of keeping the cost down because there's so many different versions of those that there are free versions that are supported. And, you know, when you're looking at cutting costs, you know, if you look at the price of the operating system, you know, Windows is costing, you know, $100 or $150. Apple's OS costs that much. And they're trying to sell that computer at that price.
Yeah. Yeah, so they can't do it. So,
but, you know, what it's trying to accomplish is access to the Internet and the web and allowing simple, you know, Word document creation and maybe some, and perhaps, you know, emailing can be web-based.
Mm-hmm.
So when you got all three of those covered, what else, you know, for a lot of people, unless you're into photography, audio, and things like that, and in third world countries, I don't think they're into that stuff. That's all that you need.
Yeah. My guess is there are going to be a lot of those sold right in the United States. I wouldn't be a bit surprised as a way to be doing a kind of a good thing because you'd be paying $400 and giving a child one of those computers, and then you'd have one for yourself.
Yeah, I'm gonna sign up today after we get off here, Larry.
I'm thinking about doing the same thing myself. Pete, thanks a lot. Always a pleasure. Get better.
And I'll walk in next month. I
okay.
promise.
All right. Good luck.
Yep.
Thanks, Pete. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, and hopefully he'll be back on his feet. Suffered himself quite a little injury there playing hockey, but he's on his back now. But he'll be up on his feet by next month when he's on again. Coming up tomorrow, Renee Molin, Masters of Ashland, Oregon, says you are smarter than you think. Well, that's good news. And Amy Hart of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association takes us on a solar tour of Wisconsin. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.
Green Bay Packer tickets or round-trip Midwest Airlines tickets, these are the top prizes in Wisconsin Public Radio's annual fall sweepstakes. No contribution is necessary. For details on how to enter, go to WPR.org/sweepstakes or call 800-383-9772.